Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Happy Christmas.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now only 34 shopping days left until Christmas, and I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for all kinds of holiday madness all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my good pals, Johnny Five, the human robot.
Yo.
What's happening, John?
2 hours and 11 fucking minutes. That's what's happening.
Buckle up, because we're about to add a lot more time to that clock. Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad?
Season's greetings. Better get all your Christmas stuff out. Better get ready, because it's coming, Buster.
You better believe it. It'll be here before you know it, as my grandma always used to say. And returning once again for Marvel Chat, we have Marty Schneider on the podcast. Marty, how you doing?
I'd be doing a lot better if I wasn't suspicious that there are some Iron Man 3 haters in the room.
Did I mention the thing where it was 2 hours and 11 minutes?
I am suspect of why you brought me on here.
We brought you on here because among the people that we know, you are the biggest Marvel expert on the internet, as far as we know.
That is not true, but all right, I'll buy it.
I would love to know who else you think that I know that is a bigger Marvel fan than you. But okay,
yeah, it's fair.
Anyway,
I do have Marvel insignias like inked into my skin. So,
yeah, compared to us, you are the man to talk to.
Sure,
you are the expert. Anyway, welcome to Christmas Creeps. This week on the show, we are celebrating Shane Black Friday as we have kind of created our own little holiday here on the podcast. Last year, we talked about the Shane Black film Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is kind of sort of a Christmas movie, but not really. And this week, we're discussing the Shane Black movie Iron Man 3, which is kind of sort of a Christmas movie, but not really.
Aren't we also doing it to memorialize the passing of one Stan Lee?
You know, I didn't want to say it because that would seem crass, but it just kind of happened that way.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if that was intentional or not.
No, we have had this episode on the books for weeks, and then Stan Lee unfortunately passed, and, well, we kind of just had to keep on trucking, really. So we'll get into one of Mr. Lee's final on-screen performances in a bit.
Rips. Boy, pour one out for you, boy. All right. First, I need to address John's thing. It is a Marvel Cinematic Movie Universe or Marvel Cinematic Universe movie released after 2012. Did you really think that you were going to get out in less than 2 hours and 15 minutes?
I have not watched a Marvel movie that has not had the word Iron or Man in its title. And all of them have actually had both of those in the title.
There was a little bit of dick waving going on in the chat before this about who had seen the least number of Marvel movies, and I'm afraid that John wins that contest. I thought I was a person who hadn't seen a lot of Marvel movies, but John takes it to another level.
I've seen Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, and about 4 episodes of Jessica Jones, if that counts.
I'm going to defend myself as Joe called me a Marvel fanboy.
I did not. You said the word fanboy, sir, not
That's
I.
fair. That's fair. That's fair. So I stupidly have seen all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, and I think Iron Man 3 is the best one, and the reason for that is that it's more of a Shane Black movie than it is an MCU movie, and I would rather watch a Shane Black movie than any Marvel movie.
Follow-up question, would you rather watch The Predator than any Marvel movie?
Are we talking about the newest one? Because honestly, I guess that defeats my point, because I haven't seen The Predator yet.
keep it that way.
All right, that's fair.
The less said about The Predator, the better. But no, one of the other reasons we had Marty on to talk about this is because back in April, before Avengers 3 came out, you did do the gauntlet. You ran the gauntlet of all the Marvel movies in one sitting.
I did. That's because I got my wisdom teeth taken out, and I couldn't do anything, and I couldn't think about anything for like 4 days straight. So I was like, this is a good time to do this, I guess. Under heavy medication is the best way to watch all of the Marvel movies.
Okay, that was going to be my follow-up question, because I had a similar experience when I got my tonsils out. Best spring break ever. On medication, playing through Persona 4. Good times.
Brad, as I recall, you also had a similar experience when we went to see Captain America for the first time.
I had a similar experience.
Do you want to tell this story, or should I?
You're all literal fucking children. When I had my wisdom teeth removed, I played through Deus Ex because I am old and decrepit.
Okay, I guess I'll round it out. When I had my wisdom teeth pulled, I laid down on the couch for 3 hours and watched Zoolander twice.
Okay, so I asked people about their, like, horror stories about getting wisdom teeth taken out, and Joe, didn't you have, like, 5 wisdom teeth or something like that? That's something ridiculous, like 10 teeth?
I had 8 wisdom teeth. Yes, I did.
You had extra teeth?
I had 4 wisdom teeth and then 4 additional, like, quote-unquote teeth.
They just put in the chart teeth question mark.
The best was like 6 months ago when I had my last teeth cleaning. I was talking to the hygienist and she just kind of randomly brought up the fact that I had my wisdom teeth out, and I said, "Oh yeah, I had 8 wisdom teeth taken out." And she went, "No, you didn't." And I said, "No, really. Look in my file. It's right there." And she pulled out the X-ray and just kind of looked at it and went, "Oh my god."
Yeah, are you 1/16th shark, Joe? How did that fucking happen?
If I don't stop moving, I die. Yeah, it's true. But anyway, no, I need to go back, circle back around to talking about the time Brad and I went to go see Captain America, because we went to a bar trivia night that night, and Brad got extremely drunk. And we were among friends, and we only had one car. And then Brad made the observation, "Hey, there's room in the trunk. I'll just ride in there." So I drove a car full of like 6 drunk people and Brad in the trunk to the movie theater to see Captain America. And when we pulled Brad out of the trunk, you looked like you had just been through a war zone.
It wasn't particularly pleasant. I do remember that. But the movie was fun.
What was it like cleaning vomit out of your trunk, Joe?
I didn't yarts.
I mean, it comes out easier than the blood.
But, well, you know, there are certain cleaning products out there. We don't need to talk about that.
Iron Man!
How about that Iron Man?
Speaking of alcoholism.
It's all right.
Didn't have any AC/DC in it, so I had that going for it.
It did have Eiffel 65's I'm Blue, though.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Did appreciate that.
But the reason we're talking about Iron Man 3 on this podcast is because it is a Shane Black film, but also it is sort of ostensibly a Christmas movie. You know, they set it at Christmas for some reason, because Shane Black just loves to do that kind of thing. There's Christmas lights everywhere. There's Christmas music playing. Robert Downey spends a lot of time rolling around in the snow. It's a delight. I enjoyed it very much.
It's a lot more Christmassy than some of the crap you've had on this show. So,
oh, good lord, yes,
true.
I will say it's a lot more Christmassy than Silent Night, Deadly Night 2.
So it's an Iron Man film. This is the first Iron Man film I had seen, but I got caught up to speed quickly, and it was enjoyable. Good night, everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
Iron Man 3.
So, Marty thinks it's the best Marvel movie, question mark?
Yes. Yes.
John, out of the three... Oh. Qualification?
I according to this list that I made before I had, like, included anything post-Black Panther. So,
okay.
I don't know. So, as of last year, it was the best. I don't know where it ranks now. It's towards the top.
John, is this better than Iron Man's 1 and or 2, or worse?
Iron Man 2 felt really sequel-y above all else, and it had some annoying elements, mainly involving AC/DC, from what I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have to say, I by default like it better than 1, because it doesn't have to take the fucking time to do an origin story. My only complaint is that it is a 2-hour-long fucking, like, Iron Man movie, though. I just can't deal.
All right. All right.
That's a tough hurdle to jump across. I understand that. I'll say this for Iron Man 2, or I'll say this about Iron Man 2 and why it's bullshit. Iron Man 2 is complete bullshit, and here's why. There's a scene early on where Tony Stark's given like his big presentation at like Tony Stark Con 2010 or wherever, and some random dude in the audience screams out,
blow something up.
And then they cut to like 5 minutes of the news. And that's why that movie is bullshit, because that's the whole movie.
Oh, because things are blowing up?
No, because somebody says, hey, blow something up. And the movie's like, no, fuck you.
Oh.
We're not going to do that.
Iron Man 2 is very, it's a bad movie. Like, just it's all around.
It's a bad movie. But that, I think that makes Iron Man 3 feel that much more fun. They brought in somebody who has a very sort of specific voice, and who has things he wants to do with an Iron Man character type movie. And they just kind of let him play in the sandbox for 2 hours and 15 minutes. And depending on how you feel about that and how you feel about Marvel Comics in general, you either kind of love that or you kind of hate that. And it kind of sounds like Brad's falling right in the middle. And I'm going to side with Marty. I think this is the best Iron Man.
Yeah, I just think he could have been given about half an hour less and still done just fine.
I will say this. I know that we've talked about, or you guys have talked about, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And how, like, once the nice guys exists, it kind of feels like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang doesn't need to anymore. Like, they,
that's true,
like,
yeah.
Like, Shane Black got everything he was trying to do in the nice guy, or trying to do it. You know what I'm saying. I think that Iron Man 3 is kind of the midpoint of that. Like, Iron Man 3 does do a little bit of the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang stuff. Robert Downey Jr. is playing much more like Harry than he is playing Tony Stark, the past incarnation of Stark. They do the, like, monologue voiceover thing that he loves, that they don't do in any of the other Marvel movies. And so it kind of feels like the next step of the evolution. And honestly, genuinely surprising that RDJ didn't have, like, the Ryan Gosling role in Nice Guys to make this, like, a trilogy, essentially. But I will say it's...
Oh, man, that would have been so good.
It's kind of, like, the halfway point in between there. So I guess what I'm saying is The Nice Guys is a better movie than Iron Man 3. I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb on that one.
Yeah, I kind of agree, and I don't want us to constantly be just talking about how great The Nice Guys is. Let's just do an episode on The Nice Guys. There's no Christmas in it, but who cares? You know, this is my show. I can do what I want.
There is Christmas at the very end. It's Christmas at the very end.
Okay, so therefore it's a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
It's a Christmas movie if I say it is, okay?
It's fair.
But no, this you're onto something there, because this movie it recycles gags from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang that maybe not a lot of people saw. So he's like, well, got a big budget now. I'm gonna take some of my favorite jokes and put them in this movie again. And then gags that would then go on to be in The Nice Guys kind of get their start here.
Right.
So it's interesting to watch a filmmaker kind of recycle gags and work them and constantly, like, trying to make things better as he kind of builds out his filmography. I think that's neat. Like, there's the one scene where it's just a very simple gag where a guy's like, tell me what I want to know, and he'll stop doing it. And then the guy goes, stop doing what? And then let's, you know, smack him in the face or something. Like, they did that in Iron Man 3, and then they repeated it in The Nice Guys.
Yeah.
Like, little Shane Black, like, interactions like that. Like, it's clear he likes those scenes, and he just kind of reworks them into other movies. So do we want to, I guess, go through the plot of Iron Man 3? It's fairly simple. It's for a long ass movie. It's a fairly simple plot.
I think that's kind of John's point. I can do it. I will do it 9 times, and I'm coming in fresh because, like I said, I'd not seen an Iron Man film. I've not seen any Avengers, so I'm gonna give it to you real simple, real straight. Tony Stark is the Iron Man. He's just gotten finished fighting aliens in New York with the other superheroes. They win. It's great. But he has mental scars. He's dealing with that. And Pepper Potts, who I assume is his girlfriend, I've never seen this woman before in another movie that I've seen, has moved in with him. It starts with a flashback to 1999 where he hooks up with a bioscientist who's trying to regenerate stuff. And he's a dick to this twerp with glasses and tells him to meet him on the roof. That'll play in later, as you probably expect, because cut back to the present. There is a terrorist by the name of the Mandarin who is posting videos online and blowing shit up. There's no bomb casings or whatever, and Tony is dealing with one of his, I guess, his friend and also the security guard at Stark Industries named Happy. Gets caught in one of the blasts after he investigates this dude who shows up, who's the dude that was left on the roof at New Year's Party 1999, to try to get Pepper Potts to buy into whatever he's selling. All right, I'm already tired of this. Somebody else take over.
All right. So I guess it's worth pointing out that Happy is played by Jon Favreau, who directed the first two movies and insisted on inserting himself in there somewhere as like Tony Stark's sidekick slash personal
assistant. So Shane Black let him spend the entire movie in a coma.
Yeah, basically.
Favreau does that. Favreau does that all the time. He likes to do that thing where he puts himself in all that stuff, and there's kind of a meta joke with him being in the coma, especially because he's the only guy in the movie who, like, knows what the hell's going on. He knows the secret that RDJ, or that Iron Man, that Tony Stark is trying to figure out the whole time. He knows because he saw it, and then he got blown the hell up. But
right, he actively does the legwork to uncover the mystery early on.
Yeah.
In the first act of the film.
Yeah.
He's got it figured.
He also, like I said, there's a meta joke going on there because he famously, after Iron Man 2, which we all just agreed sucks, had a falling out with Marvel Studios, essentially. He was mad at them for making him do all the parts of Iron Man 2 that sucked, as part of Marvel's tendency to hire good directors and then stifle their creativity all the time.
You're right, Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Still mad about that one.
So that's why he didn't direct 3, and why he's not in most of 3. And I guess, willing to go in with the coma and everything, it kind of highlights that he's in on the gag, whatever.
Yeah, but still, how weird must it be to, have inserted yourself into, the universe as the leading man's sidekick, only to then have some other director come in and finish out your franchise and then stick you in a coma, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. If I was Jon Favreau, I might feel a little bit weird about that. But then again, you know.
On the other hand, it means he doesn't have to work on the movie for more than a week.
If I was Jon Favreau, I would sleep on a big pile of money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's the correct answer.
That's true. No, I would definitely take whatever option lets me, fulfill my contract, get paid, and only have to be on set for, 7 days total.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Iron Man 2, I'm thinking about why exactly I didn't like it, other than, just a bunch of sequel-y nonsense of it, you know, just of doing the first, but, bigger with more licensing budget, basically. And there's just a lot of it that just feels we had to put this in the movie because we're setting up the next movie, basically. And
yeah, it's
the big sequelitis kind of thing going on.
One didn't have that because they didn't know they were going on.
More than any of those films, that one is the most just a giant trailer for other films.
And I think to this one's credit, it's really not. This one is fairly self-contained.
Yeah, early on I was why is he doing all this shit alone? Why isn't you know, Thor helping him? I was like, oh, fuck Thor anyway, so.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about it.
Yes, I agree. And,
I mean, the in-universe reason, which is we don't really need to go into it, but is basically this is the part, the middle chapter of the whole Avengers saga where everybody's off doing their own thing, and then they'll come back together for Avengers 2. But at this point, everyone's gone, everyone's off fighting laser aliens or whatever, and then Tony Stark has to fight the Mandarin. So let me get back into that plot real quick.
Hang on. Let me pause here, because this pisses me off. The worst thing about Iron Man 3 is how it's immediately undone by the stuff after that. And this movie pretty much we've got a capper on what is a 3, really a 4 movie arc for Tony Stark. The end of this movie, his story is over. He's done all of his development. He's confident in who he is, and he's got some shit together. Everything's capped, but because we gotta keep making that money and keep making those movies and maintain the fucking status quo all the time, all of the development in this movie is just walked back off screen by the time we get to the next movie, Avengers 2, which fucking sucks.
Yeah, and actually one of the few notes that I took in this entire movie... The relentlessness of the Marvel machine makes this movie feel like it came out 15 years ago rather than 5 years ago.
Oh, God, yeah.
The series has gone on to so many different places since this movie came out that it feels like this exists in a completely different universe now.
They also just ignore this movie a lot. Like, everyone kind of ignores that time that a terrorist kidnapped the president of the United States and the vice president was in on it. But then, like,
yeah, and also the terrorist blew up Iron Man's entire house with everything in it.
But then, like, three movies later, Tony Stark's like, "Hey, let's join the government," and he thinks that there's no like issue with that.
Are you talking about Civil War?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not great. I'll tell you that.
none of those decisions make sense if you just fact this. This is what I realized while watching the gamut there, doing the gauntlet. None of the decisions in any of these movies make sense in context of the other movies, especially Civil War.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering, like you said, Iron Man 3 really is it's the capper to the whole Tony Stark story, except for the fact that we still have him under contract and he still likes money, and so do we. So we have to include him in everything that we do from now on.
Yeah, his story's done after this.
How do we reconcile those two things? Well, we kind of don't. We just kind of keep putting him in there and letting him shoot lasers out of his hands. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Hey, Robert, come back here. The dump truck's here with all your money. You want to just just empty out the pool? We'll put the money in there. Yeah, that's fine.
Put it next to the other giant pile of money. It's funny because it's actually really true.
It's funny because it literally happened. So Happy's in the hospital, and this pisses Tony off. And it's kind of endearing to me that, like, the catalyst for Tony's big sort of emotional change in the movie, it's not Pepper. It's the fact that something bad happened to Happy. And so he like, goes on live TV, and he literally tells the Mandarin his home address and says, "Come fight me." And in the very next scene, three helicopters show up and torpedo his fucking house. Like, you thought that wasn't going to happen?
Jarvis even has like a line there where it's just like, "Listen, there's only so much I can fucking do when you put your entire home address on national television." And I don't know, man. You're on your own, dick.
Jarvis has Tony's suit like literally escape him to Rose Hill, Tennessee, which is where like the next piece of the mystery puzzle exists. So that's where Tony winds up, because his new suit is a suit that like takes itself apart into pieces and it can fly sort of independent of itself. And it's kind of the best gag in the movie. If you ask me, like, I like the whole idea of the suit that sort of flies on its own in small chunks. And that kind of gives you free rein to make some really fun action set pieces out of it. Like, especially later on where Tony's only got the one glove and the one boot, and he's just kind of flying around like that, all weird-like.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So then we get this whole section of the movie that takes place in the snow in Tennessee.
I want to drop this in because I was confused about it until I went back and thought about it. I was like, why did he end up in Tennessee of all places? And they did mention it, but it just kind of got glossed over to me. So I just want to point it out. It was the fact that of all of the Mandarin attacks kind of had the same elements, that there also was just an accident in Tennessee that had some of the same elements as well.
The same heat signature. Yeah. And before the big action piece where the Mandarin comes blows up his house, the last thing that he says to Jarvis is, "Make a flight plan for this place to Rose Hill, Tennessee."
Okay.
Which is why he gets sent there.
Yeah, and so after the whole thing happens and he lands in the snow, he's like, "Why the fuck am I in Tennessee?" And Jarvis says, "You set a flight plan."
Yeah.
Yeah.
You told me to, idiot. Sir.
Yeah. So then there's this whole section of the movie where Tony is hanging out in Tennessee with the kid from Jurassic World, another Christmas movie that we definitely talked about this year.
Oh, that was and... a kid from Jurassic World? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah. That was this year? Good God.
All child actors look the same to me.
Yeah, this year has been a real shit show, hasn't it?
Anyway, sorry.
I am kind of confused, though, because they say this is, you know, Tennessee, but it's more like fucking Mayberry, pretty much, in terms of it's, like, lost in time. Because nobody knows who the fuck Tony Stark is, except for literally one guy in town, and that's it.
Oh, hello! Did someone mention Mayberry?
Right, yeah. So, Marty, tell us about the Mayberry-ass city that we're in here now.
Yeah, so, by the way, we didn't plug it at the beginning, but I am the host...
I do apologize for that, I'm sorry.
That's fine. I am the host of a show called Breaking Mayberry, where my co-host Dan and I go back through the Andy Griffith Show to understand why old television broke your grandparents' brains and kind of scream at the, like, fake small-town mentality of this. And you're absolutely right. No one really knows or cares who Tony Stark is in this like tiny small town of Tennessee, except for one guy who's really, really into Tony Stark and has modeled his whole shtick after
it. He's doing Tony Stark cosplay.
Yeah, exactly. Who's like a huge fanboy of it. And he's also like the tech guy, right? He works in the news van, so of course he's into it. And I guess technically the kid knows who Tony Stark is because he like shows him a newspaper and is like, hey, you're fucking dead, dude. But he doesn't care who Tony Stark is. He cares about Iron Man. He cares about the robot suit like a kid would do. And that's kind of one of the themes of this movie is Tony figuring out, like, what is the difference between me and Iron Man? Is Iron Man autonomous on his own? They do, like, a Dr. Manhattan thing where, like, he's got the suit and the suit is talking to Pepper while he's downstairs doing his thing. So that's one of the, like, major themes that comes up in this movie. But anyway, the Mayberry-ness of this, I actually kind of liked because I like the idea that maybe in, like, small-town America, no one gives a shit about Tony Stark. He's a big city coastal elite that I see on television sometimes, except for the tech guy and the kid who are interested in that kind of stuff. But for the most part, these are people that are just kind of living their lives at the local bar or whatever, and no one really cares as he walks down the street. I like that. Like,
go down to the general store and ask them if what they think about Elon Musk, and you might not get much of an answer.
Exactly. You know, in rural areas, like, other than they're niche like people. They're niche fans.
Exactly.
You know, but Tony Stark doesn't have a whole lot of bearing on these people's daily lives. He could invent a new tractor or something, but he doesn't. And
congratulations, Mr. Stark, you've just invented a new tractor.
that was really reductive of me, but yeah, you see what I'm saying. Tony Stark could, in fact, say, like, help these people a lot, but he doesn't, and so they don't care.
but kind of what you're saying is that, like, he could walk freely among these people and they wouldn't even react. But for some reason, he still disguises himself and he still kind of puts his ball cap down and keeps a low profile.
Right, just in case one person does say, like, hey, are you Tony Stark? What the hell?
Yeah, you're Tony Stark, aren't you? Not really. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Who am I?
Right, and that again. Am I? Did I used to be Tony Stark? Who am I now? And he even says several times throughout the movie, you know who I am. That's kind of
Like the big runner in this movie is like, you know who I am, and a lot of characters kind of say that over and over again. Like Tony says it. I think the Mandarin says it.
The Mandarin says it
a couple of times.
He signs a card to the botanist at the beginning of the movie. Where he doesn't sign it as Tony, doesn't he sign it as you know who I am or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And that card comes back into play.
No, it's not a card. Yeah. It's his name tag from the conference.
And okay, also, that makes more sense because it has for about a year or so afterwards, that was actually Robert Downey Jr.'s like Twitter bio. It was just
you know who I am.
You know who I am.
Which is, I mean, it's not wrong. He's definitely not wrong there. I mean, he's probably in universe, he's probably the most famous man in the world.
But does he know who he is? That's the theme of the movie.
That's the real question, isn't it? Because Tony Stark is having a real sort of, I don't want to say crisis of faith, because it's definitely not that, but it's a real crisis of personality, because he doesn't know if he has it in himself to be the Iron Man full time, and he doesn't know if he's Tony Stark, tech billionaire CEO man Tony
Stark.
Here's
my problem with that. You just described a good plot for a Hulk movie, not an Iron Man movie.
I mean, that's kind of, I feel like that's like one of the runners in Thor Ragnarok is Hulk kind of having that dissociative, like, who am I kind of thing.
I mean, it's literally almost every superhero movie ever.
Right. Kind of. Always in the second or third movie, you know, the hero gives up their abilities, right? Spider-Man throws his suit in the garbage and you've got to do like a whole shtick. And so actually most of this movie is Tony Stark super spy. Not a whole, he doesn't spend a whole lot of time in the suit itself. He's making gadgets in like the garage of this kid or something. And so I like that bit, actually. I like stripped down
there's
Stark.
There's a whole sequence where he goes to like an Ace Hardware and just buys a bunch of hardware shit and makes like a makeshift sort of Iron Man suit out of like tractor gloves and a taser.
And Christmas ball bombs.
Yes! Those were the best.
Makes little grenades out of Christmas ornaments. It's kind of my favorite touch in the whole movie.
Same.
Yeah.
Kind of what Shane Black does. He injects a little bit of Christmas in there and then he blows it the fuck up.
And yeah, I really like
Christmas
that
is
part.
Cool, and then blowing things up is cool too. That's kind of the whole motto of this podcast. Christmas is cool, blowing things up is cooler.
Yes.
Damn, dude, put that on your new logo.
There's a Christmas ball that's exploding.
Nice.
If I weren't so attached to the Holly Jolly Roger, I might consider it.
Sell t-shirts. I'd buy a t-shirt.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we'll have to think about that. So let's talk about the Mandarin for a little bit, because this is kind of everybody's big sticking point with most people's big sticking point with the film is sort of who the Mandarin is and his role in the film, because he's the Iron Man's like big antagonist in the comics, right?
Yes, in that Iron Man has any antagonist that isn't himself, I guess.
I suppose. Well, it's... You always hear like, oh, the big, I don't know. You always hear about him, Iron Man versus the Mandarin. And like, I think that Invincible Iron Man cartoon, like film that came out like 10 years ago, that was about the Mandarin, but it was more like cosmic and weird and not so much about just some terrorist guy sitting on a throne in front of a camera.
Prior to 2008, Iron Man is like a B-list character at best. Not a whole lot of people know or care about him. And part of that is because his villains are lame. It's not like Spider-Man or Batman, you've just got like a whole rogues gallery. And
right, like as far as I knew, Iron Man's two villains were a Chinese guy and a dragon. That's
right.
All I knew about Iron Man.
Right, and also a lot of them are based in like Oriental mysticism, racist-ass bullshit. There's a lot of like 1960s, you know, Stan the Man going, yeah, those Orientals, now there's a villain. Excelsior! Listen. Stan did a lot of great things, but he was also very old and had some backwards ass ideas. Let's not to speak ill of the dead, but
he was a product of his time, let's put it that way.
So the Mandarin is like a bit of a like Fu Manchu racist kind of character. And the re-envisioning of him in this movie is more just like a terrorist of unknown origin. It's not like tied to any nationality or anything. And that's kind of why it's cool that they got Ben Kingsley, who has like, that's kind of a joke, been playing every race and ethnicity and nationality for about 30 years.
So, you know, why not have Ben Kingsley play a character who's basically playing a character?
Right. And then they do the reveal of this. Should I just go ahead and do the reveal?
I guess halfway into the podcast, broad spoiler alert for Iron Man 3.
And so...
for it.
Yeah, so the reveal of this is as Tony Stark breaks into this compound and he drops the Christmas ball bombs and everything, he finds out that the Mandarin, quote unquote, isn't real. The guy that's been hijacking all these signals and murdering people on television and whatnot is an actor named Trevor Slattery that Guy Pearce's character, the dude from The Roof, hired, essentially. They built a false flag around him. So he's just this, like, coked out... actor,
washed up stage actor,
picked up off the street. Yeah. And Kingsley sells this. He just switches immediately into this like very hamish but still like desperate persona. And that's pretty, we don't see him for the rest of the movie after that. Once we find out who the real bad guys are.
There is one moment where War Machine, But he and Iron Man go back because Iron Man just wants to show him that Mandarin isn't real. And the moment they break in with the guns, the guy's playing the Mandarin starts chugging a beer like that's his last action on Earth. He's like, oh, better finish this beer before they kill me.
It's kind of
his best moment, I think.
Oh, we should probably mention, speaking of Rhodey, he's been spending this entire movie like in the Iron Patriot suit, which is a thing from the comics. So he's like full on government and he's just like crashing through. I don't know what he's looking for. I think he's maybe he's not looking for Tony, but on government orders, he's like breaking into,
he's chasing down the Mandarin's, broadcast signal on all these wild goose chases.
And he's going through the Middle East, basically just smashing through, like shops where women are working. And saying, I'm here to liberate you, because he has no fucking idea what he's actually there for. And if that isn't a fucking statement, I don't know what is.
Oh, totally.
A dude in a giant red, white, and blue tank just smashing up the Middle East on false orders and then saying, oh, this was the plan the whole time. Yeah.
Well, and then like when you're watching the videos that the Mandarin's putting out, and he's talking about how like when... in the days of the Old West, they would go into these native villages while the hunters and the war parties were out doing their thing, and they were wiping out the women and children. And then it cuts to like Iron Patriot doing that shit. You're like, oh, I kind of see what he's talking about here now. Maybe this is kind of not a great thing we're doing.
The other thing is that this isn't necessarily the whole thing with the cover, as Marty put it, the false flag on the attacks, is that these are, well, I guess we'll get into it, but these are not even necessarily intentional attacks. They're dudes that are blowing up as a result of, these are accidents that are happening.
Yes, as a result of...
mixing Pop Rocks and Coke.
Aldrich Killian is the real villain of the film. It's Guy Pearce, and his new technology called Extremis. It basically is designed to regrow limbs that have been, I guess, blown off by IEDs and war injuries and things like that. And yeah, so like when these guys, I don't know what triggers it or if they just kind of do it on command, but like when they blow up, they just blow the fuck up and it causes mass chaos everywhere, and then they just kind of regenerate, I guess.
When they blow up, they blow up for good, but the way the movie was talking about it is that this is their body rejecting it, and so they have all these test subjects who they're giving them like weekly doses or whatever, but sometimes the body will reject it and they blow the hell up, and then they're using that as like a cover for attacks, so to cover their own asses so that nobody suspects them of all of this while they're trying to perfect their, you know, technology before they try to sell it to the government or whatever. Right, right. And the vice president isn't on it because one of his daughters is an amputee or whatever.
Yeah, the vice president, who I wrote in my notes, it's the guy from Blank Check. Like, it's Miguel Ferrer. He's been in so many things, but for whatever reason, I wrote down Blank Check Man.
Why did you not write down Agent Rosen?
What the hell? I don't know.
Twin Peaks, man. He was in fucking RoboCop, man.
I know he's Bob Morton, but like I just wrote Blank Check Man because Brad and I talk about Blank Check all the time.
Yeah, there was a group check or a group chat in our group chat like 2 weeks ago. I was sitting in bed right about to go to bed, and I was like, I just remembered that Blank Check exists as a movie, so I posted it in our chat, the IMDb thing. I was like, just basically, hey, remember this?
And then I immediately replied, knowing way too much about the movie Blank Check.
You know what? I can't fault you that much, because you know what I actually wrote down next to Miguel Ferrer? Like, what's in parentheses, that? Hot Shots Part 2, end parentheses.
War. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the point is, Miguel Ferrer was a man of many talents. He contained multitudes. Rest in peace.
So yeah, he's in this movie for about three scenes. Like, the amount of time we've spent talking about Miguel Ferrer is the amount of screen time he has in this movie.
And he gets one of the most Christmassy scenes in the movie, too. Kind of by accident.
Right.
Tony and Rhodey, they're like trying to get in touch with the vice president because they know the Air Force One has been compromised by the Mandarin, and they're trying to get in touch with him so that they can save the president. And they call him on his phone like while he's getting ready to have Christmas dinner with his family, and like everything is decked, like the vice president's wherever he lives is decked out in Christmas gear. There's everybody's wearing like their fancy sweaters, and there's Christmas trees are up. Secret Service guys are everywhere. And he's like, come on, guys. I'm getting ready to have Christmas dinner with my family. Can this wait?
I mean, I know where the vice president lives, but now I'm just imagining that there's a smaller exact replica of the White House, but like half size in the backyard of the White House. That's where the vice president
has to live. Guest White House?
Yes.
The guest White House.
The petite White House.
Or more like White House, or more like Cody from Step by Step, the vice president just has to live in the White House, live above the White House garage.
he lives in the RV in the driveway of the White House. But anywho, no, this scene, Vice President Bob Morton is getting ready to have Christmas dinner with his family, and then we discover that he is in fact in on the Mandarin plot because he does absolutely nothing about the threat to the president's life.
Right.
And it's shown that the reason is because his daughter or whoever lost a leg in Nam, apparently.
Yes. And so he is deeply invested in this technology to help, you know, cure his daughter, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's weird because everyone else is shown as like they're in on this because they're it seems like they're injured veterans of some vague foreign war, and then it's just his daughter is just missing a leg, and presumably it's not because of war, but it's like, I'm going off of what you told me, movie. So is this 8-year-old girl a veteran?
You know, Uncle Sam needs help from all of his citizens to help America function properly, John.
There's a children's crusade joke in here somewhere, but maybe that's even now it's too soon.
But God help us, we can't find it.
can we just say immediately after that, once we know that Air Force One has been compromised, one of the extremist agents blows up Air Force One, we get that freaking sweet Iron Man saving the flight crew, like the base, not the like base jumping scene, where he just like saves all of them and does the barrel of monkeys, job in the air.
Fantastic sequence.
It's so good.
It's very good. I liked it a lot.
Because one thing that we kind of forget when we're watching these movies is that this is a superhero movie, and superheroes save people's lives. So you would need at least one good scene of that happening, and this is probably one of the better ones in any Marvel movie, I think.
And the setup's pretty great, too, because I see all these people being sucked out of a jet, and being my cynical self in 2018, I'm like, oh, that's really sad. All those randos just died.
Yeah, this movie does like, kill a lot of people, though, like more than I would expect a Marvel movie to do. And not to its detriment, either, because it's fine, just kill the fucking mooks. Who cares?
No, yeah, this movie has a body count, and it like makes sure you know that people died. They like break down the crime scene and everything, which is also what I think puts it above the other MCU films, because like other films are like, aliens invaded Manhattan and all we did was break some glass and start a few small fires.
Yeah, and like even more so, again, like, you have like Tony and Rhodes straight up just fucking murking dudes, which I don't think you'd have that in any of the other Marvel movies. You wouldn't actually have Captain America just straight up fucking like kill a dude.
Drop a snow globe bomb on somebody's head while he's in a fountain already.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Even one of the mooks, one of this like henchmen is just like, you know what? Fuck this. I don't want. No, isn't it?
That
worth
was
it?
A good gag.
It's a good gag.
He's like, everybody here is like, weird.
You know what? No, these guys are weird. I'm leaving.
Yeah, just bails. Like, I like bye. That gag. And again, not to harp too much on the rest of the MCU, but like, and not to harp too much on Civil War, but later on they try to say that all of these things have consequences, and they show some numbers about like what happened, how many casualties there were when like a fucking city fell out of the sky and we lost like 150 people. And I go, that seems like a really low number. The MCU is always trying to balance this thing between like saying these things have consequences but not actually showing the consequences, and it's really frustrating. And that's why I find Iron Man 3 so like almost refreshing, where there's like, yeah, no, people fucking died.
Yeah, because like there's this movie includes a scene where like they sit there and they contemplate like the things that have happened to people, like Tony and the kid in that small town. They go to like the site of where that the quote unquote bomb exploded, and you see like the shadows of people who died on the wall and in, you know, burned into the wall right there, and like you get the sense like, oh, this is like a real thing with real consequences that happened to real people.
Yeah, there's a memorial service and everything.
Very haunting, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still stuck on the city of 150 people because now I'm thinking about video game chat. And Oblivion, the capital of the empire, had a population of about 150.
No. Let me be clear here. In Avengers 2, the fucking final plot is that Ultron lifts a city out of the ground and into the fucking air, and then he's gonna drop it on the planet, and that collision's gonna kill all the life on Earth or some stupid shit like that. Anyway, the Avengers stop it, and then in Civil War, they're like, well, during that thing, you lost X amount of people. And I don't think it was like 150, I think it may have been a little higher than that, but it was like an incredibly low number compared
to Manhattan during the middle of the day.
Yeah, it was like a very small number compared to like losing half of life on Earth. And this is, by the way, brought to you by the U.S. Secretary of State, who apparently doesn't understand the phrase collateral damage in these movies. This is a huge pet peeve of mine.
Especially considering, the movie goes way out of its way to showing them saving literally as many people as they fucking can. And then in the next movie, oh, you let a few people die, so we're going to have to put you under government surveillance.
Don't the DC movies go the exact opposite direction? They're like, Superman farted and it killed 9 billion people.
Yeah, that's
why Man of Steel was such a fucking drag. God, walking out of that movie, that was depressing.
I mean, because of that like weird reaction we all had to Man of Steel, that's kind of why the Marvel movies have to strike this balance, and it falls flat. It makes me feel like there are no real consequences to anything that happens. But in a self-contained little film like Iron Man 3, like the Guardians movies, which are kind of like in a thing among themselves, I can kind of understand like maybe there are consequences to this because I see them.
Right.
And it takes the time to like show the consequences happening to individual people and not just like a nameless mass of like running CGI bystanders.
And I haven't had like 4 years to forget the last movie.
But so yeah, the final act of this movie takes like an hour. The final act of this movie is an hour long. And I don't normally harp on things like that, but I noticed it this time around because, like, once Tony goes to the Mandarin, like, compound and discovers that the Mandarin is just some wacky British dude in a costume, that scene, and then the Air Force One scene, and then the big grand finale at the docks where they have to save Pepper from Killian and all his goons, it's a solid hour of action scenes, and it's ridiculous. I don't know. Something about the fact that the final act of the movie is all action scenes and it's an hour long. On the one hand, like, yeah, I kind of dig it. But on the other hand, man, there's not a whole lot of plot in this movie.
Nope.
I don't even know how to approach
Rebecca Hall's character gets killed somewhere in between there. I feel like Rebecca Hall's character could have been used a little more. There should have been something with her. That killing off of Rebecca Hall felt like it had Ike Perlmutter written all over it.
I agreed, yeah. Like, well,
I did the same thing, Joseph, where I thought the movie was reaching its conclusion, and I pause it to check the time, and I'm like, wow, okay. I still have 45 minutes left in this movie. Yeah.
You still have the big climactic action scene. And then you still have the big climactic action scene.
Yeah.
And then you still have another big climactic action scene.
I there's one thing I want to point out about the final big climactic action scene in this, which is that like they're on like, I don't know, a dock or something, like an oil rig, and Tony and Rhodey call in for backup. So they like call all the remaining Iron Man suits that didn't get blown up in Tony's house, and they're all flying around. So he just basically calls in the drones, right? Drones are all over the Marvel movies. And here's the thing. Iron Man 2 also ends with Tony and Rhodey surrounded by drone suits.
It does, doesn't it?
But
shit.
completely different, like, we're supposed to have completely different tones and completely different takeaways. Like, basically, it comes down to, like, my drones are great, your drones suck. But then, like, the drones also are semi-controlled. It's part of that whole blending of Tony and the Iron Man suit. Because he's jumping from suit. I like that sequence, by the way, where he's jumping from suit to suit.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
it's good stuff.
It's good visual kind of storytelling too. Like,
yeah,
he's so reliant on the Iron Man, not only the Iron Man suit, but like all the Iron Man suits, and he needs those to help him do literally any of the things that he does in the end of the film.
Oh, and if you,
because he's just a man. Like, at the end of the day, it's just some guy with the power to make suits at will, basically.
If you still haven't gotten it by the end, though, he, like, at one point in time, he's like looking at his Iron Man mask, and the Iron Man mask gets engulfed in flames, like coming out of the eyes, like it's literally a demon. If you haven't figured it out yet, by the way, that would burn the shit out of his face when he put it back on, now that I think about it. Holy shit. How does he just not have permanent scars?
Well, then it's a good thing it blew up, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, and then you think about the first line of the movie where he goes, you know, a famous man once said, we create our own demons. And there it is, right there.
Right. And like, that's like I said earlier, in most of the time in the good comics, Tony Stark's biggest opponent, biggest enemy has always been Tony Stark. And since we never dealt with the alcoholism in the movies, and we're never going to,
they kind of did in Iron Man 2, but we kind of can ignore that.
Yeah, but they wussed out on it. They've, like, he's behaving that way because of palladium in his blood or whatever. They never straight up said, yeah, Tony Stark is a drunk. Whereas, like, they have an entire storyline, very famously in the comics, called Demon in a Bottle. Like, they don't fuck him.
Right.
Now I'm just imagining he's just bought stock in, like, Palladium Schlager Vodka Company.
It's the only thing that keeps Iron Man's heart from stopping completely.
Ah, billionaire playboy has to have
it's also killing him.
He has to have a fatal flaw, and that fatal flaw is gonna be the booze. Excelsior.
It's the booze, and it's also the metal that keeps his heart from dying. Oh, boy. So anyway, the big final action sequence. Iron Man suits are flying everywhere. Extremist dudes are blowing up left and right. The villain turns into Fireman, and then Tony and Rhodey save the day, and we get the great sort of final sequence where Tony and Pepper embrace. And
oh, Pepper kind of saves the day. Pepper gets the final kill.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, Jarvis gets the kill.
Okay, let's back up then. So the big final action sequence, yeah, some bad shit happens to Pepper because she has been injected with the Extremis virus stuff too, and she makes her triumphant return as Fire Pepper. There's got to be a better name in there somewhere.
Spicy Pepper?
Chili Pepper?
The Red Hot Chili Pepper.
Well, this was filmed in Wilmington, so she's like Carolina Reaper.
Nice. That's it. We're done.
We did it, yeah. She comes back as Carolina Reaper, and she gets the final killing blow on.
She doesn't. Jarvis does. She got an assist.
Killian. All right. Yeah, she stabs Killian, and then Tony shoves him into one of the Iron Man suits, and Jarvis flies him away and blows him the fuck up.
Oh, that's right.
The end. Hooray! Evil's punished. But then we get that final scene where Tony and Pepper embrace, and he gives her Christmas gift, which is that he's initiating the clean slate protocol, where all of the Iron Man suits fly around and explode in a lovely shower of holiday fireworks as they stand under a makeshift Christmas tree.
Can we talk about the giant bunny?
the giant booby bunny? Yes.
The giant, exactly. I thought the arms were boobs when I first, like, it's just the way the shot is angled when he drives up in the driveway, but that bunny, I thought it was like a weird sexy boob bunny, and I was like,
it's the way the bunny is constructed. Like, the arms are like right out front and they look like giant cans. It's ridiculous.
It's so bad. I mean, I know that's kind of the point, but I don't think they intended it to be a boob, like a Lola Bunny boob bunny, but it ends up being that, and it's terrible, and I hate it, and it's also the best.
It's the greatest Christmas gift Pepper would receive or would ever receive. Oh, man. So, yeah, Iron Man 3 is definitely a Christmas movie. Back me up here, guys.
It happens at Christmas.
Yeah.
I can't back you up there because it fails the litmus test.
There's a couple of Christmassy things in there, like the first time Tony tries on the new suit, there's like a jazzy Jingle Bells coming on.
That's a pretty good scene.
There is that whole shtick about like what is he gonna get Pepper for Christmas, and he gets the giant boob bunny, which is a lame impersonal gift that you should not give your girlfriend that you're living with now. There's you know, the Christmas dinner thing with Miguel Ferrer, the vice president. There's a lot of Christmassy, and also like they came up with like interesting ways to put Christmas stuff in. Is there a tree lighting ceremony going on at one point, or like a Christmas play? That's why the news van is there.
Oh,
that
no,
Christmas
Tony
hijacks.
It's the Miss Chattanooga Christmas pageant. Yes.
Yeah, something like that. Which I think was just an excuse for like bikinis in winter or
basically,
something.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a weird scene.
What we're saying is this is 100% a Shane Black film because, yeah,
none of this
has anything to do with actual Christmas, but he uses those sort of the accoutrements of the holiday to sort of give his film a little bit of a festive atmosphere and make the lighting that much more bright, because I think his favorite thing in the world is Christmas lights, because they're in like every movie he's ever made, even if there's no Christmas in it at all. And yeah.
There's a soupçon, there's a patina of Christmas everywhere and just covering the film.
A light film of Christmas cheer, if you will, over the entire thing. Ugh. Anyway, I believe that's... Unless anybody's final thoughts on Iron Man 3 before we head to the crankometer zone.
Sire, it's alright.
I mean...
I watched it. It was fine.
The biggest problem is that I spent most of the time thinking about the real Iron Man, Jeremy Irons, and about how we can't watch Die Hard 3 because it's not a Christmas movie.
I also was tempted to watch Tetsuo the Iron Man, the Japanese horror film. Instead, just talk about that.
I'm gonna be the voice that says, you know, my final thoughts. Iron Man 3 still rules. I got off.
Awesome, Marty. Great.
I turned.
I mean, it was good. It wasn't that good.
I turned it off, and my girlfriend was like, "Hey, what are you going to talk about on Christmas Creeps?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm just going to say it fucking rules a bunch of times." Status report: it still rules. It rules. The end. Bye.
I liked it. Iron Man rules.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I'm with Marty on this one. Like, I think I just think it's a great sort of self-contained little superhero movie, and I appreciate that Shane Black got to Shane Black up a Marvel film. And that's kind of all it needs.
If you go on Shane Black's computer and find his porn folders, just pictures of the house from Christmas Vacation.
100,000 twinkling likes, and I must put them all in every film I ever make. So yeah, let's head over to the crankometer now. This is our patented scale where we rate these films on an X-Y axis for some stupid reason, where the X-axis is the Christmas-osity of the film, and the Y-axis is the quality scale of the film. So gentlemen, on a scale of from -5 to +5, how Christmassy is Iron Man 3? I feel like we just talked about this.
Marty, you were about to say?
Oh, I was going to say, can I plug my show again? Because we based our scale on Breaking Mayberry, which is Barney Meter and FIFO Meter, off of your scale on this show, and it's terrible. Your system is bad, and now our system is bad.
Well, the original system was, where did this movie fall between the extremes of Crank 2 and Christmas with the Cranks?
Yeah, and somewhere along the way, we turned it into a scatter plot.
If I remember right, the intention was to make a terrible idea.
Yeah, this is entirely on purpose, and we realized that.
And then I stole your terrible idea like an idiot! You can listen to Breaking Mayberry on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking Mayberry. I endorse it. Hell, I was on it.
All right. So what's the question?
How Christmassy is Iron Man 3? It's not Christmassy. So I'm willing to entertain the notion of giving it
positive points. What did we give Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
A negative one, positive three.
I feel like if Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is a three on the Christmas scale, this has
no,
to be
this,
a four.
No, this
right?
was a negative, negative one. Which I feel like was a huge oversight because that was Christmassy as hell, at least in look
well,
and design,
that might,
and not so much in spirit.
We change the goalposts every week for what counts as Christmassy or not.
I am a rock. I always apply the formula. Would this movie have happened if not for Christmas? And the answer for this is an unequivocal no. What did we give Go?
We gave Go. Where is it? We gave Go a 2.
On Christmasosity. Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
I would go with a 0 on this
one. 0 maybe. Or 1. Somewhere in there. Because it...
I'm gonna go for a 1.
Yeah. It doesn't do anything wrong, and it does play with the trappings in an interesting way. It doesn't just have them there for the sake of getting on a Christmas movie list like some Christmas movies do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like this movie really falls into Brad's metric of, like, one out of every 12 movies would take place at Christmas just because of how the calendar works.
Yes.
It's like, this movie kind of accidentally falls on a Christmas 2013, so why not, basically?
Yes. In fact, a lot of Shane Black movies kind of follow that same sort of path.
Right, I mean, like, he does that on purpose. Like, he sets his movies at Christmas almost literally so he can put Christmas lights in the frame.
I mean, they look nice. They look pretty.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Shane Black does get a bonus, I guess, because, like I said, he doesn't misuse it so much. Not really misuse is the wrong word, but, like I said, a lot of movies will set it at Christmas and it's just like, oh, by the way, it's Christmas time, and that's all you really get out of it. He does go to the effort of putting Christmassy things in the movie, even though he really doesn't need to, because they don't have anything to do with anything. And I think he gets
almost
a point for
like
that.
His signature or his calling card, and he pulls it off.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really tie sort of the spirit of the holiday into his movies unless he absolutely has to. So there, you get the scene where, you know, the scene where at the end where Tony destroys all of his suits, and he kind of couches it in the frame of like, oh, this is his Christmas gift to Pepper.
And it's
and that's
fireworks.
Fine.
And it's nice. Fireworks.
But like that, they could have written that scene and it would have had the exact same impact if it weren't Christmas, you know?
Fourth of July.
Or just hell, her birthday. Like have the whole movie take place on Pepper's birthday. And it would have worked exactly the same. But the fact that he sets it at Christmas kind of...
So the Dr. Manhattan scene where he was like trying to get the Iron Man suit to rub his shoulders, that was a phony Stark, right?
Thank you.
Yes.
Go to jail!
I don't know. I think half of this podcast enjoyed that joke.
Did you want to throw in on the Christmasosity?
Yeah, I'd say 1 to 2.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're going to give it a 1 because it... It makes some fun use of it, but it doesn't go overboard with it, and it doesn't really tie too heavily into the plot of the film. So, you know what? We'll give you a 1. So then, gentlemen, the real question, how good is this film?
Let's see. 1 point for Miguel Ferrer, -1 for not enough Miguel Ferrer, 1 point for the Mandarin, an extra point for how much the Mandarin pisses a bunch of nerds off, -1 point for being about half an hour too long. So I'm at +1 right now, and I'm willing to go higher or lower, but that's my baseline right now.
I got about a +1 or a +2. I enjoyed it. I watched all of it without thinking that I would prefer to be doing literally anything else, which is, you know, an uncommon occurrence for this podcast.
I will give it 2 points for not requiring me to watch a bunch of fucking Captain America movies.
Well, that too.
I just say, I don't necessarily have a problem with all of those. It's just I never got into them, and at this point it's like, I don't want to spend 30 hours on fucking movies just to know what's going on.
No, and that's perfectly valid.
Yeah, like, no, that's reasonable.
If you haven't been keeping up at this point, like, there's not a lot of incentive to start now.
Unless you get something removed from your body, and you're going to be in the same place for a while, then I recommend doing it.
Yeah, I mean, unless you're literally a captive audience, then there's really no excuse.
If it seems like you're just going to be snowed in for a while, if, you know, maybe there's an emergency situation and you're going to be stuck put for until you get buried out, that's probably a good time to do it.
Pretty much, yeah, yeah.
That's such a wonderful fucking endorsement for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I just want to see the I just want to see the poster for Iron Man 3 with a quote from Brad underneath it that just says, "I watched all of it."
Avengers 5, great if you're incapacitated.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, I'm saving it for a long flight where I have nothing better to do.
Are you currently stuck in an elevator? Thor 2, try watching Thor 2.
Perfect.
There we go. We got to that joke eventually.
Yeah. But no, this, I feel like I agree with Marty here. Like, this is the best of the Ironmans. This is a fun sort of self-contained little Marvel movie about Tony Stark kind of undergoing PTSD and kind of dealing with his own personal demons and whatnot. And it does it fairly well, and the action is good. It's just, I think my feeling, I agree with John, is that it may just be a little too long. But overall, I enjoyed the hell out of this.
What did you give Kiss Kiss Bang Bang? A positive 3?
Yeah.
Okay, how are you gonna this movie's better than Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. So
yeah. I think
just by the scale that you've given yourself, you have to either demote KKBB or you have to give this like a 3.5 or a 4.
I refuse to play by my own rules.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. Well, I'm the guest, so you have to do what I say. No,
split the difference and do nothing.
I'll give it a 4. I'll put a 4 on there.
I see. Here's the thing. I agree with Marty, and now John and Brad have to fight us about it.
I can move up to a 3. So whatever. I mean, it's not a bad movie. I enjoyed it. As far as superhero films go, it's one of the better ones I've seen. And as far as MCU films go, it is still one of the better ones I've seen.
As far as booby bunny movies go, it is the best one you've seen.
It is the best booby bunny. It is the third best booby bunny movie I've seen, but we're not going to get into that right now.
No, we need to get into that now.
Yeah, we're getting into that.
Brad, continue. Joke. Extrapolate. Explain.
I didn't want you to keep drawing this joke out.
What are the Space other two? Jam? Come on.
There were very clearly not two other one examples, but when he said that.
Well, let me tell you about it. The Japanese title is Usagi-san Goes to... No, No, it's a good movie. I am totally willing to go with whatever... I won't say it's a 5, but whatever you guys want.
No,
it's a good movie.
It's not a 5, but... I'm the host, damn it, and I'm going to make the final judgment, and I'm saying it's a 4.
Okay. I can live with that. John?
Whatever.
Hooray! All right. So, yeah, on your patented crankometer scale, mark it down, Booker. It's a 1-4 for Iron Man 3. So, gentlemen, the holiday season is upon us, and before we close out the show, there are a couple of things I'd like to tell y'all about.
Tell me.
The first thing, and the least important thing, is that I had a giant bowl of gingerbread-flavored Life cereal today, and my voice and my breath could not possibly be worse. I absolutely hate myself right now. It's terrible.
That's
is what
fascinating.
I'm saying.
Go on. Oh, okay. Cool.
Speaking of cereal, what the fuck is this going on? There's like a Grinch movie happening, I guess, because the cereal won't shut up about Grinch.
Another cereal or another Grinch movie, this one featuring a Kendrick Lamar song that I was subjected to at some point. Not saying that Kendrick Lamar is bad. I'm saying...
All I know is that Grinch is on the boxes of checks now for some reason.
Oh, okay.
Question.
That's unfortunate.
Do you get all... of your new release movie news from cereal boxes?
Not all, just most.
Is that how you keep up with the current releases at the cinema?
Well, no, sometimes it's from, like, Dorito bags, too, so.
Listen, I learned about Hotel Transylvania 3 the hard way, okay? I was at Target, I was going through the cereal aisle, and there he was.
I feel like everybody learned about Hotel Transylvania 3 the hard way, because is there an easy way to learn about Hotel Transylvania 3?
I'm going to go on record right now as saying the first and only time I heard about Hotel Transylvania 3, I was at a Sheetz and there was a cardboard cutout of Andy Samberg's character. And if I didn't already know who that was, I would have no fucking clue why he was there.
The first time I heard about Hotel Transylvania 3 was when you all started saying the phrase Hotel Transylvania 3. I wasn't aware there was a Hotel Transylvania 2. God damn.
So you just heard about it like a minute ago. Literally a minute ago.
20 seconds ago.
Yes.
No, real talk. It was one of those deals where Amazon was giving away free tickets to Prime members because they couldn't get people in theaters to see it or whatever.
Yeah.
I think they did it with Jumanji as well.
Man, I'm not talking about Jumanji on this podcast. I've yakked enough about Jumanji elsewhere.
Okay.
The very last thing I want to talk about real quick is that we are now officially charter members of the Christmas Podcast Network. It just debuted this month, and it is ourselves and a coalition of other like-minded holiday heads who host Christmas podcasts all year long. Some of them do it just during the holiday season, as you probably should. But
we call them weak and cowardly.
You heard the man. But yeah, so head over to ChristmasPodcastNetwork.com and you'll find ourselves as well as 9 other shows, such as Weird Christmas, hosted by Craig Kringle, who discusses all things holly and jolly and oddly all year long. I think his podcast is only seasonal, but he has an amazing Instagram and Twitter presence. It's fantastic.
Is that his real name?
Shh, don't ruin the magic.
I still believe in Craig Kringle, okay, John? So just let me have this. But yeah, we're part of the Christmas Podcast Network now, and you should definitely check out ChristmasPodcastNetwork.com for all of your holiday podcasting needs. And I guess the very last thing I'll say is, Marty, thank you so much for being on this episode of Christmas Creeps.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. I'm always a fan.
Excellent. And if you would like to hear more of Marty's amazing ramblings about Marvel movies, I assume, or just Andy Griffith Show stuff in general, please check out Breaking Mayberry. Where can they find Breaking Mayberry on the internet, Marty?
You can find Breaking Mayberry on iTunes and Stitcher and wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts. We're on Twitter at Break Mayberry, Facebook.com/Breaking Mayberry. And I think that's it. You can also email us BreakingMayberry@gmail.com.
Excellent. Yeah, it's a great time. It's a great podcast. I'm a fan. I'm looking forward to where you guys are going with season 2.
Yeah, we just started on season 2. We're recording some this afternoon.
Excellent.
And next month, I'm just going to re-upload the episode you were on, Joe, because you were on the one and only Christmas episode of the Andy Griffith
Show. Yeah, and that was like 6 months ago, so just no time like the present to listen to a Christmas episode, right?
Get it? Present?
Ho, 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 ho.
Hey.
All right, folks. Well, that'll have to do it for Christmas Creeps. So go out there and get out those Black Friday deals and get yourself a nice new TV or whatnot, whatever you're looking for. Oh, crap. Last thing. I keep saying the last thing, but the very, very last thing. We will have a special second episode out this week on Thanksgiving Day. So keep an eye out for that.
Consider it the post-credit sequence of this pod. No, it's a fully fledged thing.
Actually, can I do one last thing?
Yeah.
I'd like to a personal message to Mr. Shane Black. Shane, hi. Please keep making movies that have Christmas in them, because when we run out of Shane Black Friday, we'll have to do Hanksgiving, and holy fuck, do I not want to watch Polar Express.
Very good. But yeah, keep an eye out for our second episode this week on Thanksgiving Day. It'll be in our feed, and we will see y'all down the road. So for Christmas...
American Thanksgiving, by the way.
American Thanksgiving, yes. I should point that out. So if you have any questions or comments about this show or past episodes, you can email us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter at Christmas Creeps, or go to facebook.com/Christmas Creeps and like and subscribe and do all that fun stuff. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on YouTube. We are on Google Play. We're everywhere you get podcasts. If there's not a place where you want to get podcasts that we are not on, please let us know. That's all I have. So for Christmas Creeps, I am Joseph Wade.
I'm Bradford.
I'm Johnny Five, the human robot.
Happy Black Friday, everybody.
Happy Christmas.